Hello, I'm Becca, the owner of Meet Cute Romance Bookshop, and this is the Meet Cute Book Pod. Today's episode was supposed to be a recording of our recent in-store event celebrating Tia Williams' Love Song for Ricky Wilde, where she was in conversation with the ever-delightful Alicia Rye. Unfortunately, our recorder seems to have an as-of-yet undiagnosed issue, and neither that event nor our event celebrating Fallon Ballard with Susan Lee successfully recorded. Congrats to everyone who was at those events, since they were both a blast and were apparently ephemeral and unrepeatable. On the bright side, this is giving us the opportunity to reshare the recording of our panel on writing and publishing trans romance with Anita Kelly, E.E. Ottoman, and Emery Lee, moderated by T.J. Alexander. This is particularly timely because the Trans Rights Readathon is returning for a second year, running from March 22nd to 29th. What is the Trans Rights Readathon? It was founded last year by author Sim Kern, and it is an annual call to action to readers and book lovers in support of Trans Day of Visibility on March 31st, calling on the reader community to read and uplift books written by and or featuring trans, genderqueer, non-binary, gender non-conforming, and two-spirit authors and characters. You can find out more and sign up to participate at transrightsreadathon.carrd.co. And while you're waiting for that to kick off, you can listen to Anita Kelly, E.E. Ottoman, Emery Lee, and T.J. Alexander discuss finding community as a writer and how to deal with the tough parts about the business side of publishing, the kinds of books they haven't seen enough of and would really want to read, the first time they saw themselves reflected in a fictional character, writing, reading, and loving fan fiction, what straight media property could use a queer reboot, and money and the financial logistics of being an author. They also take some audience questions, recommend a book of their own to check out, and recommend another book that they've loved recently. The audio is a little wonky sometimes. This was recorded virtually, but it's definitely worth ignoring that for the conversation. Before we transition to the panel, a little about the panelists. T.J. Alexander is a critically acclaimed author who writes about queer love. Originally from Florida, they received their MA in writing and publishing from Emerson College in Boston. They live in New York City with their wife and various houseplants. Emery Lee is the award-winning author of Meet Cute Diary and Cafe Con Lichi from Quilltree Books / HarperTeen. He is the founder of hashtag TransBooks365, a community hashtag made to celebrate books by and about trans people, and is a founding member of hashtag QPOCFest, a virtual book festival celebrating books by and about QT BIPOC. Coming from a university background of creative writing, he's gone on to write entertainment news, edit literary magazines, and work as a trade book reviewer. Outside of novels, he's written interactive fiction, short stories, and webcomics. Air books have received starred reviews, been featured in ALA's Rainbow Book List, and been translated into multiple languages. Drawing inspiration from anime, pop punk music, and air own cultures and identities, he seeks to tell multi-layered stories about complex characters that challenge conventional power structures and make room for marginalized readers across fandom spaces. E.E. Ottoman currently lives outside of Philadelphia with his wife and an entire house full of dogs and cats. He grew up surrounded by the farmlands and forests of upstate New York. Ottoman has an undergraduate and a graduate degree in U.S. history and a degree in library science concentrating on archives. He is passionate about history, stories, and the queer spaces between the two. In his free time, Ottoman is an avid vegetarian cook, practicing fiber craftsperson, and novice mushroom cultivator. Anita Kelly is originally from a small town in the Pocono Mountains of Pennsylvania and now lives in the Pacific Northwest with their family. An educator by day, they write romance that celebrates queer love in all its infinite possibilities. Whenever not reading or writing, they're drinking too much tea, taking pictures, and dreaming of their next walk in the woods. They hope you get to pet a dog today. And now, through the magic of podcasting, here's the audio from our panel on writing and publishing trans romance.
So the first thing that I thought we could discuss amongst ourselves, just us here, is just our process of writing and how it can be a little bit lonely. It's a very solitary activity for a lot of us. And I'm just curious how our panelists find that they can like get support, keep out of their own head while writing, create community. This is just me wanting advice on how to do this, actually, to be honest, because it is fucking lonely. So we're going to go in kind of a round robin style for the panel tonight. So I think alphabetical by last name was what I arbitrarily decided, which I think that's Anita first. So Anita, what do you think?
So writing is very lonely. And I feel, at least in my experience, that like the higher up you get in publishing, I think it actually gets lonelier in like a weird way, which I think is partly how at least traditional publishing is like built to make it harder to talk about things like the more success you have. But how do I get through like not getting in my own head? I don't know if I have an answer for that. I mean, I have a writing group, which I am very grateful to have, that I met through like a writing program that I did. And then I also have, you know, just other like closer friends in my genre and or that like share my identity. And like to find, if you're someone who's just starting out and trying to figure out how to find those communities, I really wouldn't be afraid to just like slide into people's DMs, you know, that seem to be, you know, authors you admire or other people who are like querying or whatever. And just like, it works somehow. You just kind of like find your people. But I do think one positive thing of being published and having a couple works out there now is that I do know that there are like people out there that get my work. And so even if like I am doubting myself, I'm like, somebody is going to read this and like it and like believe in me more than I believe in myself. And so that for me is helpful to like power through.
I love that. I definitely slid into some DMs just to say we're friends now and kind of forced myself on people that way. Emery, anything that you'd like to share, your tips and tricks?
Yeah, so I actually agree with what Anita said too about how it does actually kind of get harder and like lonelier, I guess, like the longer you're in the industry. Because like when I first was getting involved in the industry, it was really easy, I feel like, to just be like on social media and just be like talking to everyone and like trying to make friends. And then I feel like the longer you're here, the more you get burned, but also like the harder it is to kind of like bridge the gaps between like people, because sometimes people will treat you different. Like they'll be like, oh, you're one of those authors, like you're already published, so we don't want to talk to you. Or like, oh, you're like lower, like you're not selling as well as me, so I don't want to talk to you either. And like that kind of thing. But I think eventually, like I kind of like stepped away from social media almost entirely because it also got weird, like trying to find that balance between like not wanting to be in readers' spaces and then also not being able to stay out of readers' spaces when readers are everywhere. So I'm not really on social media that much anymore, but I find that like, because I already had some friends in the industry, now I just make new friends through those friends. I love going to author events and just like, you know, like especially like when they're at local bookstores and just like getting to know the booksellers, getting to know other authors who attend the events, getting to know like other people who know those authors like from before they were authors. And like, I feel like that has been how I've really expanded my community. So even just like the other night, I was out to dinner with a bunch of people that I met that way. And I think it helps to kind of be grounded in space, because you know, like all of these people, some who are like really in the industry and then some people who just kind of like are friends with people in the industry, but it feels less like, I guess, all encompassing. You're not as like trapped with like this industry headspace all the time. Like it can be like, I feel like when you're on social media or also when you don't have like real life friends that you can kind of interact with. So I think that has been probably the most helpful thing, just as far as like keeping me out of like that like death spiral that you can kind of get into.
Yeah, my experience, at least this week, on social media has been, you know, when you have a book release come out, there's a lot more people talking at you and tagging you in things. And that can be great and really fun, but it also can be like super overwhelming. And I feel like, I want to like talk to people and connect and stuff, but I also feel like I'm not doing it. Social media like has to be, you know, something that I definitely eke out a little bit at a time. EE, what about you?
I would really, you know, echo what everyone else is saying. I think when you're first starting out in the industry, it's good to find authors in the genre that you're working in that you admire, you know, who you think are writing very similar kinds of things to you. Be their friend on social media, friend their friends, you know, like, and kind of build out. And as you get to know the community, you'll figure out kind of like where you fit, where your group is. I too have stepped away from social media over the last year or so, almost entirely. And so I think now what's really helpful for me is just to interact with people who are creative, not necessarily other authors, although that is great, but just people who are doing all sorts of creative things, music, art. I often get, especially if I'm starting to feel kind of burnt out and in my head and overwhelmed by the industry aspect of publishing, I find it's really, really helpful for me to interact with an art form, people working in an art form or in like an artistic industry that I have no connection with. It makes me kind of think about process in a different way and kind of gets me out of that publishing, writing, comparing myself to others, space, and puts me back into like a more of a creative, less business oriented space.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense to me. And piggybacking off of that, I definitely, when I feel like super overwhelmed with a deadline or with something publishing related, sometimes the thing that is most helpful for me is to talk to like people who have no idea what goes on in publishing. Like my family has no idea what I do or how books get made. And when I try to like go to them to complain or like explain this thing that's, I'm struggling with, they'll just be like, it's not a big, no one cares about that. It's not a big deal. And I'll be like, oh, right. In the real world, very few people care about this. It's just me. And that's fine. Thank you all for that. That's all stuff that I'm going to be thinking about. So this is just me getting therapy, actually. I'm so happy about it. Okay. One thing that I thought would be fun is if we discussed things that we would really want to read that maybe we don't see enough of, or maybe we haven't seen at all being published. But something we wouldn't want to tackle ourselves or write ourselves for whatever reason. Emery, do you want to start us?
Sure. So like I'm mostly in the YA space. And so I feel like a big thing that people have kind of like been talking about, but that like has not been heard by publishing is like, I would love to see more stories about trans girls, especially like sapphic trans girls written by trans women. And like, obviously I don't want to tackle that because I just don't want to take up that space. Like I would like to actually see trans women be able to write that. But I think in the last like 3 years, there's been like this surge of trans stories in the YA space that we never saw before. Like trans stories were almost unheard of up till that point. But then it was like almost entirely trans guys. So it was like, well, okay, but come on, give us like trans girls. Like, I would love to see like a really cute, just like sapphic trans girl romance written by a trans woman.
No, absolutely. Me too. I can't think of any off the top of my head right now, but I know I have read some YA books with trans girl leads.
I know like three, yeah. But they're like, one is like very much like the struggle of being trans story, and the other two are like speculative, which is good, don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with that, but I'm like, I would love to just see like a cute, like, you know what I mean, like just like a cute romance, like, yeah. It's just like trans girls being happy, like give us some like sapphicness and like some of that. I think that would be cool.
Yeah, I think, I mean, trans women are just underrepresented in publishing generally, but yeah, especially in the YA space, I think that it's important that we acknowledge that. EE, I think you're next in line, how about you?
I definitely second the more trans women writing trans women in romance. It's a huge gap in the industry that I really don't know what to do about, except for, try to nurture all of the trans women that I know who come into the industry. But I think aside from that, I would love to see more T for T trans romance. Adult, I write in the adult romance genre. So in that genre, I would like to see more more trans romance in kind of subgenres that I've not seen a lot of trans romance in. So romantic suspense, westerns, probably more like traditional Regency. I know that there's a few, there could definitely be more. You know, I would just love to see more trans romance in areas of the romance genre that they're not currently in.
Yeah, I know of one trans cozy romance that's coming out, I think, later this year, but that's something that, like, just all the genres. I would just love to see more of all of that. Anita, anything on your end?
I would love to see, I mean, repeating everything that y'all just said, but I would also love to see things like Queer Marriage in Trouble. I'm trying to think of like any that I've read in the adult romance sphere, and I think Timothy Janofsky is writing one, but I don't think I've seen any. And as like a married queer person, I feel like I need that in my life. And like queer parenting stories, you know, like all like people being old and boring and queer. It's like what I want in my life as a boring old queer person.
So, our backs hurt, our knees hurt.
Give up. Marriage is hard.
No, I think I echoed that when I was doing a podcast episode with Becca on the Meet Cute podcast.
Yes.
Earlier this month, I said I really wanted to read more. And there's like no way to say this without sounding, you know, strange, which I think is really telling. I wanted to read more romances with like older characters, like golden age, little retirees, you know, like, I don't know. I've just never seen that. And I thought it would be, you know, an underserved market that, you know, we're all going to get old. And I thought it would be nice. Anyway, that's all great. I love all those. And I also want to see more of all of that. Thank you. Please give it to us now. In that vein of like things that you want to see, things that you haven't seen enough of, what would you say was the first time you saw yourself reflected in a character? And it doesn't have to be in a, you know, a gender way, although it could be. What, you know, when was that? EE, I think we're starting with you first this time.
Man, this is a hard one. I can't think like off the top of my head. You know, like, I think that's one of the reasons why I started writing, right? You know, I'm sure that's to some greater or lesser extent something that we're all gonna answer like that. I think that when I was a teenager, I really empathized in a lot of ways with Miles Vorkosigan from the Vorkosigan series, you know, in that he had a lot of disabilities. The books were a lot about like him trying to find place in the world and like not really fitting into any of the different categories. And so like, I really empathized with that, really saw myself in that. But I think, yeah, you know, like the kind of like lack of seeing myself was really why I started writing. And I'm trying to think if I read a book with a trans character in it before I started writing, like a trans man. And I don't think I did.
Yeah, kind of same for me. Like, I can't really remember, at least like as a kid, seeing any at least like accurate or positive portrayals of even just, you know, queer people, but definitely not trans or non-binary people. But I would always, like, as a kid, end up, like, vibing real well with, like, the villains, because they were always, like, kind of coded as, like, oh, close enough. Like, so that was just me being like, oh, I guess, yeah, being evil is it's an option. Anita, anything that comes to mind for you?
That made me laugh. I have the same experience as EE, where I feel like I never quite had that experience of like, oh, this is like me on the page. And so I feel like that is also why I write. But I do kind of want to like turn this question into an opportunity to talk about EE, because like several years ago when I first started getting into romance, because I never read romance before, because I was a snob. But when I started getting into the romance genre, like, I don't know, 6 years ago or so, I feel like I followed E.E. and Mae Petersen and Corey Alexander. And I feel like you three, like, I feel like I learned so much from all of you. And like, I used a lot of Corey's writing and resources when I was writing my debut with a non-binary character. And so I feel like, I know, like, you all were all like a big part of my journey, both in romance reading and writing. And so I just want to say thank you for writing, especially like your kind of like cozy, like warm, soft, like trans romance is like really what my soul needs. So thank you.
Oh, thank you so much.
Take 10 minutes to all say how much we love each other. Because like, thank you, Anita, for reminding me that, like, before we go any further, I just want to say I've read all, like, everyone who's on this panel, I've read your stuff and I think it's all great. And I read your stuff, with the exception of Anita, whose debut came out a few months before mine. You know, your books were the things that I was picking up when I was like, you know, is this even something that I can do? Like, am I allowed to write about these kinds of characters? So, like, yeah, I was so, so thankful to be able to find y'all's work. Sorry, did you have anything that you wanted to talk about seeing yourself reflected anywhere?
So I get asked this question. I feel like I'm like almost every panel that I'm on, and my answer has been pretty much consistently the same, which is I still have not seen a character who looks like me in any project anywhere. Not even my own stories do I write characters who are actually me. I write characters who have pieces of my identity, like in different stories, but never have I written a character that has like all of my identity. So in that way, there is not a character who looks like me. That said, though, I feel like something that I found is that the more intersectionally marginalized a person is, usually the more familiar we are with projecting ourselves onto and heavily relating to characters that are not like us at all in, like, you know, the identity ways, because we've never had that. But like, I feel like the first character that I really related to is Squidward from SpongeBob, because I was just like, God, this guy's so grumpy. He's so mad at the world. He really wants to be a musician, but he sucks at it. Like, that was me as a kid. Like, I feel like that was very much like, what, you know? But then like we were saying too about like villains, I was like him from like the Powerpuff Girls, like this, like very like obviously like he was supposed to be like the devil, but he was like obviously supposed to be like, you know, cross-dressing and like very like genderqueer like vibes. And I totally loved that guy and I didn't know why. But I feel like for me, I was raised with like kind of the expectation that there would never be anyone who looked like me, because people who looked like me were not supposed to exist in media. We weren't entertaining, we weren't relatable. So like I feel like, you know, creatures and monsters and like villains and talking animals, I feel like, have all been for me like very like mood. Like, I feel like you're unreal and I'm unreal, and I totally vibe with that.
Yeah, shout out to all the genderqueer villains. Like, bring in that representation, I guess, as best they could. This segues actually into a topic that I think some of us might know a little bit about, which is sometimes when you don't see yourself reflected in media, there's fan fiction. Could we have like a very informal poll of like who has dipped a toe into fan fiction in their life? Anyone? Oh, it's all of us. Listen, I happen to have a, you know, theory. I haven't done any research into this, but it just seems to me like a lot of queer authors have learned a lot about writing in a way with fan fiction. And I would love to hear if that rings true to you, if it has impacted your writing in any way. We do not need to blow up our spots. We do not need to give our handles out. But yeah, I'm just very interested. I have completely forgotten whose turn it is to go first. Is it Emery?
Yeah, so I definitely did fan fiction. That's where I started writing with fan fiction. And then like, I basically continued doing that all the way up until like maybe a few months before I got my agent. And then I was like, okay, I'm deleting all of this off the internet. No one will find it. No one will ever trace it back to me. So definitely fan fiction person. Even now I say that like I have projects that are essentially fan fiction. It's just like me. And there's a lot of like, and I can do a whole spiel about how there are so many books like for the last like hundreds of years that are just fan fiction of other stories that came before it. But yeah, so I have like some stories that are just like, oh, what if I took this character but tweaked these things, like whatever. So I do love fan fiction, but I think for me, like something that was really formative about like fan fiction, like as like a creative medium, is that I feel like, as opposed to where I feel like traditional books tend to aim for like a message, or like they have like this like divine purpose that they're seeking to like meet, I feel like fan fiction is all about satisfaction. Like those stories exist because there is something that we as people just like have like this desperate desire and like thirst to satisfy. And fan fiction is like, I'm going to satisfy that. And so I feel like when I write my stories, like people will be like, oh, what's the divine message? I'm like, I don't care about that. I'm here to satisfy. Like there was just like, there was an itch or like a thirst that I needed to satisfy. And that is why I'm writing the story. And like, so ultimately for me, I feel like it's about thinking about what a story can give the reader, not so much as to like what the story itself needs to say, but what it can give you and like what you can like get from it. And I think that's kind of like how I approach like reading and writing now. So I guess like I'm just searching for like the fan fiction and published book.
We could have a whole nother panel about one of my first writing professors in college once told me in the class, if you are trying to write about something, you've already failed. And I didn't understand that for like a very long time until I got older. And I was like, oh, if you sit down and you're like, I'm going to make up a story about how this is bad or this is good. Like, that's not a story. You're writing a pamphlet at that point. And yeah, it can just be about vibes. And that, like, anyway, we could just go on for hours on that, but I won't, because we have so much more to talk about. For instance, EE, fan fiction, go, anything?
Yeah, so I also started writing fan fiction and did for a very, very long time. And I think that like what I really got out of that experience, you know, is that fan fiction, I think, is very experimental, you know, because you're doing it for free and you're putting it out for free. And there's, you know, a little bit of, you know, people can read it and like it or not. It's very low stakes. And so I was able to experiment a lot and say, okay, you know, this is going to be about character building around this one specific part of this character's identity or personality or whatever. You know, this is going to be about, you know, exploring this one trope or whatever. And that was really, really helpful, you know, especially going and writing romance after that. And also like allowed me to like break up the process of writing into chunks, as opposed to when you write to publish, right? You have to do it all. You have to hit every single point.
Yeah, I think that there is definitely something to be said for fan fiction as a good practice, both in figuring out what you do well, what you can work on, and also like taking like something and making, you know, a shorter little project. Anita, fan fiction, anything? Thoughts? Feelings?
Yes. So I am like super out of touch with fan fiction these days. Like I've never been on AO3. Like I feel like unhip in my like nerdiness because I'm out of touch with fan fiction. But when I was a teenager, I definitely was very into fan fiction back in like, you know, the 90s, early 2000s. So like I had an Angel Fire like website with like a Starry Night background and like all white, all lowercase like stories. And when I think about it now, I'm like having an existential moment as EE was talking. Like, I feel like my writing is still just like my fan fiction. Like my fan fiction was just me, like, you know, self-inserting, like, you know, my feelings and just like having people talk and like being nice to each other. And I feel like that's still like what I do now, is I just write like low stakes, inserting myself into like these soft romances. So basically, I've not changed since I was 15. The end.
But I love that, because like, why would you? Why would you need to? Yeah, I think that fan fiction for me was like a really great way to just practice and learn how to write love stories and see what it resonated with people. And also like, you know, get to play around with characters' gender in a way that like, you know, I wasn't getting from canon media. So yeah, I love that about I love that about fan fiction. Maybe someday we'll all be able to write like a spec script for some show. I don't know. That would be great. Official fan fiction where they pay me. All right. This is sort of like dovetailing on that idea. But is there a piece of straight heterosexual media that you think could use a queer reboot or retelling, or are reboots trash and we should leave them behind and do original stories? I think we could, you know, talk about this all day too if we wanted to, but we won't. We'll just try to keep it, I guess, iffy. Anita, I think you go first this time.
Like, this is a bad question for me because I don't watch things. Like, I'm really bad at watching TV.
Just children's cartoons.
Just children's cartoons. I could tell you a lot about those and my son's favorite YouTubers. I love like period pieces from like the 50s to like the 80s. So I would love like a queer Wonder Years.
All right, Emery, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, so I'm not super into like queer retellings. Like, I would prefer like original stuff. But with that said, I think every gay who is like my age had a formative thing around Charmed, like when it came out in like, you know, 98 to like 2007 or six it ran. And so I would like to see that like done actually. Like, I feel like back in the day, everyone thought it was so progressive. And then you're rewatching it, like, this is so white feminist bullshit. So I'm like, I would love to see like a modern queer, like actually progressive retelling. I think that would be like fantastic.
Yeah, I was never a Charmed girly, gender neutral, but my wife is. And yeah, I have seen bits and pieces of that show. Same idea, I think. Would be fascinating to see it updated for sure. Any thoughts for that?
That's a great question. I think that I generally these days fall into the category of let's not reboot things and let's stick with original properties. But that being said, I will do a queer trans retelling of the Scarlet Pimpernel. One of these days, it'll happen eventually. I'll get to it. So I guess that's going to be my exception.
That would absolutely rule. I have read a couple of YA. I don't remember what the line is called. It's like a rebranded classics, remix classics. So I read a couple of those, and I think it's a cool concept because, you know, I think the classics that we were all forced to read in like high school, why not make them trans? Okay, let's talk about money, which is a little bit gauche. I never actually said that word out loud. I am now realizing, and I don't know how to say it out loud. Nobody judge me.
I think you said it right.
Is that gauche? Okay,
I think so.
Great. I don't know French.
You just had a French character though.
Yeah, bad idea on my first horrible idea. So yeah, money, the business of being an author and just the logistics of doing this as a job. You know, for some of us, it's a full-time job. For some of us, it might be a part-time job. How do you balance that and make it work? And, you know, I think that in a discussion like this, we can't ignore that publishing is super white, it's super cishet for the most part. And for certain authors, money may not be as pressing a concern as others. So who is first? I think it's EE.
So I definitely do not write full time. I have another job that I do along with writing. So kind of balancing that, you know, is definitely difficult time-wise. You know, having to work 9 to 5 and then also write on top of that. I think that one of the things financially that is really important for people getting into the industry to know, and I think is particularly difficult on people who are in any way marginalized is the fact that a lot of writing really depends on, I don't know how to put this, on like shadow money, right? So like generational wealth, having a spouse who has a really good job, you know, these kinds of financial safety nets that a lot of writers have and don't talk about. And I think that's particularly true for people who write as their full-time job. I think often, you know, there'll be the conversation around money and writers' finances will be, oh, I write full-time and I make X amount. But what gets lost is that the vast majority of the time, those authors also have another partner who is making, you know, a good amount of money, or they have, you know, savings that they've been able to, you know, supplant them, the writing money with, or they have inheritance, you know, or they have a family who's paying for their house while they're able to write. And these kinds of undergirding financial resources plays a huge part in the industry in ways that we as authors aren't really good at admitting to and talking about. And a lot of marginalized people don't have that, you know, like, and that's a huge, huge, huge hurdle. You know, it's really, really hard to be an author if you're just like struggling not to be homeless, right? And I think that that's one of the biggest hurdles for trans authors, honestly, is how many trans authors are really how many trans people are really financially marginalized. And that, you know, makes writing and makes being in the writing industry really, really, really challenging. That was really heavy. So I'm sorry. But
no, don't apologize, because I think at least from my experience, it was all very, very true. You know, when I first started getting published last year, I was as upfront as I could be when people asked, like, you know, oh, so how are you doing this? Like, I don't have another job. This is what I do full time, but like not by choice. Because I do this because I lost my, you know, 9-to-5 job, and no one was hiring me for in that industry anymore after I came out. But you know, I was able to do this because I was really, really lucky to have a spouse who did have at the time a really steady 9-to-5 job that could support us both while I was like, you know, like, let me give this a shot. And, you know, not very few people have that opportunity. And I think it's important to, you know, just acknowledge that I definitely wouldn't be able to do this if my circumstances were different. And yeah, yes, absolutely. And earlier this year, my wife did lose that job. So now we're in this like precarious situation where I'm like, well, do I keep doing this, or do I try back to get that 9-to-5 job again? But like, you know, we're going to be fine because we have a safety net. Like you said, we have savings and we have things that we can fall back on while we're trying to like work things out. But, you know, constantly going through my head as this is happening is like, you know, if this had happened, you know, 9 months earlier, 10 months earlier, like, could I have made this happen for myself? Probably not. Yeah. So that's more heavy stuff, and I'm so sorry to have to bring that in, but it's the truth.
Say too, so as someone who's doing it full time, like, you are also like hustling, like, you know, like, you're someone that has multiple book deals, like, you have 2 books coming out this year, like, and I think that that is what you have to do, like, if you want to write full time or even part time, like, you have to have multiple things cooking at once, which is a lot of like. I mean, you know, unless you're like a book talk sensation, which typically only happens to, you know, like white, cis, straight people. And so, yeah, I think that is like the key, that like, if you want to do this full time, like, it's maybe possible, but you have to like burn yourself out doing it. And so, yeah, it's very tough.
Emery, anything you wanted to add?
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to say that, like, I write full time, and like, that only worked out for me because like a random intersection of different things lined up. But like, you know, I started writing immediately out of college and I got a full ride to college. So I was riding the like fumes of what was left over from like my college money. Got my deal just in time that if I'd gotten it like a month later, I would have had to give up writing. And then same thing, like, you know, I got, my agents have been very understanding that like, this is my career. I need to make enough money. So we won't accept a deal that's not, you know, a living wage. And even then, I write 3 to 6 books a year. And even then, like hustling, trying to sell all of those, I can rarely get deals fast enough to actually supplement like my full income, to the point that I have like side gigs. They're all publishing related, but like, you know, I've worked for like different like mini writing projects. I've done like, I do paid events and like class visits and like all this type of stuff, because the book deals really don't do it on their own. And all of that combined with the fact that like I live with a roommate to make my expenses lower. Like I have been like, I spent like, you know, the first few years in publishing, like keeping my expenses down to next to nothing just so that I could like write on the fumes. And I think that's like, it's hard because like, I think a lot of people come to publishing with already established lives. Like you've been living your life for however many years, you have kids, you have like, you know, older parents to support, you've got all these things. And then it's like, how can you possibly make that much money? Like I got lucky that I got signed with an agent, like right out of college and like all that kind of stuff. So I didn't need a full-time job just yet. Like I was still kind of like, and I think that that's again, like things that people just like, don't really think about is like, everything in your life has to come together at exactly the right intersections to be able to like live off of this.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much like just luck of the draw and timing that has to all like converge for any of this, any book deal really, I think, to come to fruition, which is, it's really scary to think about because like, you know, I'll have people ask me like, oh, you know, do you have advice on starting a writing career? And it's like, I don't know, man, like, get really into tarot and like, you know, like try your luck, I guess, because I have almost no idea how I did it. I don't know how someone else would be able to do it in a slightly different situation than mine. Yeah,
I feel like for me, like when I was planning on like I want to make this more my career, which I only did like, you know, recently, like after having other careers, but I feel like I had to make like a plan. So I knew I wanted to be a hybrid author, which is easier to do, I think, in the adult romance sphere, but like I wanted to do self-pub and traditional publishing. So that way when like, because the payout structure of traditional publishing is so like effed up. but self-publishing, you can have more control over it, but then you also don't get like, you know, $1,000 advances. And so it's like, but I knew I wanted to do that. I needed to like cross over into different like age categories. And like, I knew I would have to have several things cooking at once. And like, so far that is working for me, but it is like a lot to juggle. And the thing with self-publishing too, is that like, I think that is where there's more marginalized people telling more interesting stories. But I think something that people don't realize too, is that it is very expensive to do self-publishing, right? Like especially like getting a traditional deal first, like it's such a privilege to have that advance of like, here's just thousands of dollars for writing your book. Like, whereas when you're self-publishing, you have to spend that thousands of dollars to even, you know, if you want to do it well, if you want to have a good cover, if you want to have good editing, like to even get it out into the world. And like sometimes self-pub people take off, but a lot of times they don't. And you've just like sunk this money into like your passion. And like, you know, if you have that savings, like you was talking about, like, then that's cool. But if you're like, you know, a marginalized person that barely has any money, but you really want to tell your story, then you're just like paying to like further your suffering. So it really is. Yeah, it's tough. And a lot of it just has to do with luck and privilege. But if you're like prepared to hustle hard enough, it's possible, but that also takes a toll on your mental health. So yay, this is all really, really happy.
I like being able to talk about, you know, the stuff that we really have to deal with as authors, and especially as queer authors, because, like, you know, we people who are smarter and better at explaining this stuff than I am have, you know, done long Twitter threads on, like, the arcane process of getting paid by a publishing house. If you know, people who are watching and listening to this don't know, you know, you get paid as an author in sometimes very chopped up little increments over the course of years, like, you know, sometimes 3, 4, 5 years until you see the last bit of that money. So it's really difficult to, you know, live off of that. And it just makes everything, yeah, like you said, it makes everything necessitate having to hustle and having a bunch of pots going all at once, and to be constantly working on something while you're selling something else, and, you know, potentially also developing a third thing. Yeah. So that's just part of it. It's just part of real life, I guess. But we are kind of running into sort of the last few 10 or so minutes of this event. So I would love it if we could answer some Q&As from the audience. This is a question from Jordy, who says, as a trans woman working on a romance novel, what's the best way to get into the industry? Well, I just kind of gave a really terrible answer for that. I'm so sorry. Whether that is going through the process or getting mentors like y'all. Who would like to start? I completely forgot the order at this point. Anita, how about you?
What if I don't have an answer? So I think you should decide, like, if you want to be traditionally published or if you want to do self-publishing. If you want to do traditional publishing and you're in, like, the querying stage, I would definitely try to find, there's documents and, like, whisper networks out there about, like, the agents that are safe for you to submit to and to not submit to, especially as a trans woman. So I would find those. Like, I can send you some that I know of if you want to send me an email, and find, yeah, other trans people to have on your side to, like, commiserate and talk to as you're going through this process, because it can be rough. But please do it, because I want to read your book.
Skylar asks, what has been the most joyful part of the process for each of you? Oh, I like joy. Emery, do you want to take that one?
Yeah. So I think for me, it's just been recently I've been going to, like, a bunch of events. I don't have any books out this year. I've just been going to a bunch of book events for friends. And, like, every time I get to one of those events and, like, we're all just kind of, like, celebrating with each other and everything, I feel like that's, like, the most joyful part. And just, like, getting to, like, look around the room and see how, like, every time there's, like, more and more people that I know and that I support, and that, like, we're all kind of, like, here for each other. I feel like that's been, like, definitely the highlight of the whole experience.
My highlight is I sometimes get very, very sweet messages on social media. So I guess social media is good for something. I've gotten some really sweet messages from, like, parents of trans kids, you know, or adults who are their children. Do you know what I mean? Grown children. Saying that, you know, something I've written or one of my books has sort of helped them in seeing things from their kid's perspective. And I think that's really, oh, that's cool. Meaningful to me. EE, anything?
You know, I really love the process of writing, you know, like, every time I start a new book and I'm working on it, you know, I fall in love with that story. And then, you know, once it's published, yeah, like, the feedback that I get is 100% why I keep going. I've gotten so many messages and emails and people in person, you know, telling me how much my books mean to them. So that's definitely the joy.
Love that. Anita, do you want to add a quick joy, a joy of yours?
Same as yours. I've gotten so many very sweet messages from readers, and I feel like I've just, like, met so many people that I would not have expected that I got to meet, like, because writing is a lonely, solitary process. That's why I've always been drawn to it. And so I've been surprised at how many amazing people I've met through it.
As romance authors, are there limits on raunchiness that you put on yourself? No, I mean, this is just me. Like, not really. I mean, I think each story is just going to be different. And if I go too far, someone going to tell me in the process, an editor, my agent. My agent has told me many times when to chill out on certain things, not sex scenes. She's always telling me more of the sex. So that's just my personal experience. Emery, any raunchiness limits for you? EE or Anita?
No.
No, no limits. Limit does not exist.
It doesn't.
All right. Okay, here's one. Do you have any tips on starting writing groups? This is from Autumn. I've really enjoyed my time writing with other people, but since that's only happened during NaNoWriMo, which is National Novel Writing Month, if you're not familiar, I find that outside that month, there are little to no opportunities. Do I just cold call text people who I know and just ask where to start? I started, I don't know if I would call it a writing group. It's me and one other person. And I just like kind of told my friend, like, we should write together every day and like keep each other accountable. And that was like, I think 2 years ago. And we just haven't stopped because neither one of us wants to be the one who's a jerk and says, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to wake up at 7 a.m. with you anymore. So that's what I did. Anyone else have writing group ideas or tips?
Yeah, like I'm in a writing group and basically someone was just like, hey, we should all write together. We're like, okay. And then like I have another friend who made like this just like massive group chat of just like everyone that they like talking to in the industry. And would basically like, okay, like whatever y'all want to write, like I'm here. And so like people just be like, oh, does anyone want to write? And they'll just like groups, people just kind of like get together to write. So I feel like it's just, yeah, I mean, like at any point, if you're like, oh, I know some people, let me just ask if they want to. And like, if they do, then great. If they don't, then I mean, you know, try again in a couple weeks or something.
Yeah, I find most people are just waiting for someone to say like, I'll organize it. And then like, whew, okay, I'm in there, you know. Most people like would love, I think, to be invited to your writing group. So I hope that works for you. All right, maybe this is a good time to wrap up and sort of tell the people what book of ours they should read, book or books. Go nuts, I think. Self promo. Straight people get to do it all the time. And then maybe recommend a book that you've read recently that you loved. Anita, do you want to go first?
I would love to. So my most recent release, that's the word, is Something Wild and Wonderful, which is kind of the book of my heart. I really love it. But I'd also recommend, I think people don't know that I have a series of novellas. They're all very queer, and I would love people to check those out for Pride. The first one is called Sing Anyway, they all take place at a karaoke bar, and I love them. But a book that I want to tell people about is called The Prospects by K.T. Hoffman, and it comes out next year, so you have to wait like a year for it. But it's my favorite book of all time. It's about a trans baseball player, and it is a very sweet, wonderful gay romance, and it's so good. I'm so excited for it to be out in 2024.
There are so many people who are going to make me care about sports over the next couple
I know.
Of years.
I know.
Sports romances.
I know. I now care about baseball like because of romance.
I got to learn about basketball. I got to learn about soccer. I got to learn. Well, all right. I guess I got to. Emery, how about you?
Yeah, so my most recent release is Capricorn Lychee, and it's actually like my quiet book. I feel like it didn't get as much recognition as my other books, but it's about like two kids whose parents own rival cafes, and it's like an enemies to lovers romance as they like work together to save their parents' shops. If you learn about soccer, though, I feel like that's a great time to read it because there is a soccer element to the story. It's not like a super big thing, but like they're on like the world's worst soccer team, and it's kind of like hilarious. I feel like that book for me was kind of the one that didn't get nearly as much attention. So I would love if people would go pick it up and give it a chance. As far as like a book that I want everyone to read, it would be Andar and Santi We're Here by Johnny Garzadilla. It is legitimately like the cover is absolutely beautiful. And it's about a non-binary muralist who falls in love with this guy who's now working at their parents' taqueria. But then they find out that he is undocumented and they have to deal with that whole like, you know, struggle. But it is honestly one of the cutest romances I've ever read. And I sob. So highly recommend.
Seconding. It's so good.
It's definitely on my to read list. I've been seeing nothing but glowing praise for it. So I'm very excited. EE, you're up.
So I think what the book, my book that people should read, is The Companion. It is a kind of dreamy, cottagecore-y, high heat, historical romance set in the 1940s, I think late 1940s, with a T-for-T poly couple. So it's two trans women and a trans man. And it will be, there's going to be hardcover collector's edition may be coming out. So keep your eye, I guess, on my Instagram for that. And the book that I would recommend is What Moves the Dead by T. Kingfisher, which is not a romance, but it is a retelling of Edgar Allan Poe's that Follow the House of Usher, which I think is funny that I'm recommending it since I said I didn't like retellings, but it's really, really, really great. And the main character is trans mask, and I highly recommend it.
I need that now in my life. So thank you for bringing it to my attention. My book that came out this week is called Chef's Choice. It's second in a series. It's a foodie rom-com about two trans people who end up fake dating and they kiss. You don't have to read the first book if you don't want to have this one make sense. But the first one's called Chef's Kiss, if you want to check that out. And let's see, I have two books that I wanted to shout out. I'm so glad nobody else mentioned them. The first is a sapphic romance called Mistakes Were Made by your friend and mine, Meryl Wilsner. It's just sexy, high heat, age gap, all the things. Just a fun book. Throw it in your beach bag for the summer, everyone. And there is another book that I'm reading right now. So I can't even tell you what it's about because like I just got into it. And I don't read copy for the books that before I buy them. I just hear that they're good and I trust people. It's called Summer Suns by Lee Mandello. It's like very creepy, a horror ghost story, I think. I don't know. We'll see. But I really recommend it because I'm enjoying it.
And there you have it. A huge thank you to Anita Kelly, E.E. Ottoman, Emery Lee, and T.J. Alexander for their insight and their joy. And, of course, for their books, which you should definitely pick up and or add to your Trans Rights Readathon TBR. In fact, we can help with that. You can pick up copies of books by Anita, E.E. Emery, and T.J. in our shop or on our website, meetcutebookshop.com. Another great option is checking to see if your local library stocks them, and if they don't, requesting that they consider doing so. And that's all for this re-released episode of the Meet Cute Book Pod. Thank you so much for joining me. Please remember to take a look at the Trans Rights Readathon's website, transrightsreadathon.card.co. I'm Becca, the owner of Meet Cute Romance Bookshop in San Diego, California, and I hope you'll tune back in for more deep dives into romance writing, reading, and publishing. Yeah.